Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, partnering with donors from all walks of life to improve Southeastern Virginia through grants, scholarships, and leadership initiatives. Learn more at HamptonRoadsCF.org.
Hello, everyone. I'm Another View producer Lisa Godley in for Barbara Hamley. Both the United States and Iran have agreed to stand down following several weekend strikes in and around the Strait of Hormuz. Both countries are accusing each other of violating the ceasefire. However, both nations have agreed to pause strikes and, according to the U.S., resume talks. But how will all this back and forth impact gas prices over the summer months? Political analyst Dr. Eric Claville joins me in the studio to share his thoughts right after this national, regional, and local news from NPR and WHRO News.
Discussing today's topics from an African-American perspective, this is Another View.
Hello, everyone. I'm Another View producer Lisa Godley in for Barbara Hamley, who is thoroughly enjoying her time off as she celebrates her birthday. Barbara, we wish you huge birthday hugs and wishes. You are one of the hardest working people I know, and you deserve to be both spoiled and celebrated. So we hope you're having a wonderful time. Someone else who works extremely hard, deciphering all of the legal jargon, changing policies, and economic trends is Dr. Eric Claville. Eric, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today and helping bring a little clarity to all that's going on.
Absolutely. Thank you. And also, happy 4th of July. Happy birthday, America. And hopefully everyone's enjoying their time with family and friends, or will be. As soon as you're off.
Okay, well, we're going to begin today's discussion talking about the Strait of Hormuz. Talks regarding that are underway. The U.S. and Iran speaking about, they're speaking through regional mediators. And the sticking point, reopening the Strait. Vice President J.D. Vance says talks are going well. Gas prices are starting to come down. Eric, my first question to you is this a hold-your-breath situation? Because things could change at any minute, yeah. Or are things finally turning around?
Well, Lisa, with this entire operation called Epic Fury, which many have seen has been an epic failure for many reasons, we'll talk about in a moment, but nothing remains the same. So definitely do not hold your breath, because you end up doing more damage and harm to yourself. This entire operation has just been a huge mistake. It was an ill-advised attack upon Iran without consulting, of course, Congress. That's been talked about within the political circles, within the media, even Congress themselves. Congress has, matter of fact, one of our congressional delegation members in the Senate put up once again a War Powers Act to limit the president's further action before. And then, of course, it was voted down. Now, of course, there has been a vote to uphold it recently. But in the very, very beginning, that was rejected. And that was rejected by Republican-controlled Congress. And I want to preface the rest of my comments, and even the ones previously. Keep in mind that our U.S. government is a trifecta. It's Republican-controlled White House, Republican-controlled Congress, and Republican-controlled U.S. Supreme Court. So any and all actions that are taking place that are allowed are being allowed by a Republican-controlled trifecta of our federal government. Just want to make sure that when you look at blame and you want to place blame and look at leadership, you want to make sure you look at it in the right place because, again, if you don't have the votes, if you don't have a majority, then you can't have a meaningful dissent and you can't lead. And that's where we find ourselves in this two-party system as we take a look at the trifecta. Now, just because you're of the same party doesn't mean that you have to go along with everything that one side says. There is checks and balances. But what we're finding is that this is a consolidated form of government now, where there's a voice, especially in the legislative branch, that has abrogated their voice to any actions from the White House. And of course, the U.S. Supreme Court, they're upholding a lot of those actions as well. You know, again, these are the spoils of winning out elections. But I just want to make sure that from a very quick 101 civics lesson, we understand that. But what's happening now in Iran, what's happening now in the Strait, keep in mind that there's no other country that is supporting the United States. As a matter of fact, our president lectured and basically badmouthed the European leaders, our NATO allies, which was, in my opinion, many others, one of the greatest alliances that we've ever had post the world wars, right, of nations basically joining together in order to protect, you know, democracy and keep from, at the time, dictatorships from crossing over past, over Europe, past Atlantic and the like. That has been also challenged as well under this administration. So we are, as United States, and we are expending our resources. We're expending our ships, our ammunition. We're expending our people. We're expending every and our goodwill as well for this operation that many see does not benefit the United States at all. Since the Obama administration and then, of course, Biden, and then even before, you know, we've had measures in place to contain Iran, and the agreement reached under the Obama administration had been working. Many agree. And the even the deal now that we see, many Republicans are criticizing it, and others, because actually it's worse than what we had in place. And it's also revealed a lot of our weaknesses that we have. Case in point, we are shooting $2 million Patriot missiles in order to knock down $25,000 drones, right? Because when the drones come to our ships, you just can't let them, you know, right, come. You have to knock them down because these are multi-billion dollar, you know, assets that we have floating out there. So when you do that, how long can you do that until your stockpile of those weapons are starting to become depleted? Now, in addition to that, we see where our biggest threat to the U.S. leadership and hedge money that we have in the world is China. You know, of course, they're competing with us economically. They're competing with us militarily. They're competing with us with our goodwill across the world and providing resources to nations that need access to cash and capital. And right now, if we got into a conflict, a serious conflict with China, some worry that we would not be able to really compete against them and in this situation in Iran as well. Now, coming back to the Strait, mm-hmm. I have to also say, of course, because we're in Hampton Roads, our resources are our service members. And the stress on our families. There are individuals whose deployments are extended because of this, and it's impacting them. It's also impacting their families. I know some, and we probably all do know some family member, or maybe a friend, or connect a friend of a friend whose family is impacted by this. So these are real consequences of what we're seeing of a war that we did not have to go into.
Now, I remember early on, we were told this was not going to last long. I think we were given a time frame of a week or two, even.
Right. Maybe 30 days or something. But again, I mean, with this administration, you can't trust anything that comes out. Even the world leaders understand that. We have European world leaders that says our president lies. You can't trust anything he says. Even Iranian leaders are saying you can't trust what the president says. So you have J.D. Vance, vice president, there on orders and authority of the White House for on behalf of the country trying to negotiate. But then you have a president who's giving threats, you know, to do things. And which is, again, it just creates chaos in the midst of chaos. And then from there, you also have the Strait itself. So from a U.S. resource standpoint, a U.S. goodwill standpoint, we are now expending all of that and probably will suffer because of that, because the world, in my opinion, as I mentioned before, they are moving past the U.S. and finding reliable alliances because of this administration and what's being allowed by this administration by our representatives in Congress and being held up by the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, when we look at the Strait economically, the Strait of Hormuz is very important. And for people that didn't know what the Strait was or where it was in the world, we know it now. Mm-hmm. You know, 25%, up to 25% of all crude oil comes out of there. That little small 20-mile distance, 25-mile distance, where you had to go up a curve and come around. So you have Iran, you have Qatar, you have the Arabian Peninsula, you have those countries that are have shipping lanes through that strait that come through there to distribute crude oil across the world. Well, that crude oil is just sitting there. Now, there has been some easing of the restrictions as some tankers are now flowing out. And there have been some tankers coming in and out, but not at the rate that it needs to in order to supply the world with the crude oil that it needs.
But we're seeing gas prices going down.
Well, so this is a phenomenon of stock market and also reality, right? So when the Middle East conflict was at its height, of course, prices skyrocketed. Brent crude oil went up per barrel, the futures of it. And that's the difference between price today and futures. So you have the futures in which individuals buy the product of crude oil, which is gasoline and other products, but they buy gasoline in bulk at that price at that time. Well, they're going to have to sell that gas at that price so that they don't utilize or lose profit. So our gas station, you know, they buy at that particular price in bulk, and at that price, they have to sell it to us. Now that we've had some easing, less strikes, there's been more talks, then the stock market itself has, crude oil has come down because investors are now more, they're anticipating the strait opening up. But you will see spikes, and we have seen those go up and down, depending on what's happening on the ground and in the political news. Now, with that being the case, in addition to prices going down, now keep in mind, prices are not down where they need to be. Mm-hmm. We're talking a few cents, all right? But a few cents is good when you're used to paying, you know, $50 for your tank, and now you're paying $90, you know, like I was, you know? So that's a difference.
You must be using diesel.
93.
Wow.
You know, but so when you take a look at that, the number one, like I said, what's happening in the political fray, the fears and anxieties which caused crude oil to go up, now it's coming down because there are talks, but now the filling stations are selling what they have to sell at bulk price that they bought at that time. But now, since the price of crude oil is down, as I think its height was like $112 a barrel, is down under $100 now. So now the bulk price goes down. In addition to that, we've also have utilized a ton of our oil reserves in the country in order to keep prices stabilized, right? So now we have to, before prices get permanently below $4, right? We have to replenish those reserves before those prices can come down where we are used to prices coming down under $3 a gallon, hopefully for unleaded. Will we see those prices again? I'm not optimistic we'll ever see those again because now we know what's happening. And then, of course, you create a permanent back and forth in that part of the world where we have stability. At that part, a lot of people part of that deal or negotiated, presuming the deal is signed, the amount of money that Iran would be able to access to rebuild, you know, where we have bombed them, where we destroyed. There is a lot of individuals that are not, that puts Iran at a better position, way better position than under the agreement under Obama. And that worries a lot of individuals.
All right. Thank you, Eric. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Now, Eric, one thing folks are talking about, President Trump's financial disclosures are all over the news. He made more money last year than he has his entire life.
With this various business ventures generating more than $2 billion in income in 2025, more than triple his income last year. $1 billion came from crypto businesses, which reports say are directly tied to foreign governments. And then there are real estate deals in the Middle East, places like Saudi Arabia, but also countries like Vietnam. And then there's his meme coin, which was launched 3 days before his second inauguration, generating about $635 million in royalties. He also received more than $80 million in settlements from media outlets that he sued. And the president says, "I never speak to any of the people who run the money. They invest it."
Right.
That was his comment when he was questioned on his income. And analysts say the president was referring to hundreds of millions of dollars that he has generated from stock trades when he said that. And then there's the new foreign gift from Qatar, his new Air Force One worth $400 million that he says will transfer to the Donald Trump Library Foundation in 2028. Eric, are any of these investments and gifts conflicts of interest, or am I missing something?
Well, you know, first of all, I think that's very telling. And of course, that raised a lot of eyebrows, not just in the public, but also in Congress as well, about the amount of money that the president has made while he's in office. You know, now keep in mind, his personal dealings are in what's called a trust, right? However, when you peel back what's happening, he has his family employed in the family business while he's in office, right? So his sons are around, his son-in-law, his daughter, everybody's there. And they're doing business. One company that the sons have invested in received a contract from the federal government and multi-million dollars. And we'll talk about a few of those just more, but there's obviously conflicts of interest all over the place. But again, you're only able to do what you are allowed to do. So there's no check on that, they're allowing the president to do. Now, the Constitution is very clear as well. It's the foreign emoluments. Emoluments clause, right? So it's a domestic and a foreign clause. And basically what that term means is that it keeps you from being able to profit, you know, while you're in office or from holding a certain position, you know, and from the foreign side. So Article 1, Section 9, it forbids federal officials, including the president, from accepting any gifts or payments or titles from foreign kings, princes, or states without Congress's permission. And this basically helps, of course, stops, you know, any bribery or buying favors from foreign members, right? Now, is that plane a gift from the king in that particular? Absolutely. But again, you're only able to do what you're allowed to do. So once again, as I preface this entire show with the 101 civics lesson, is that there's a trifecta in this government that now that is withholding any checks, which is causing an imbalance in our government. So if you're upset about it, it's because Congress, your congressional member that you voted for, that now is in the majority, is allowing this to happen. So got to get on the phone, talk with them, or you got to vote them out if you want to find any type of balance back into our government. Now, the other thing is, This comes at a very, very bad moment because everyday citizens are struggling, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and even career workers that were making six figures out of Washington are struggling, right? These are individuals who are highly educated, doctorate degrees, years of service, years of research and so forth, who were cut when this particular administration came in. I mean, we talked about, like DOGE was so long ago. But people are still being impacted by DOGE because they lost houses. They lost jobs. They lost houses. They had to move. They had to go into other professions where they weren't making as much. And their impact, of course, is not being felt like it could have been where they were. Case in point, National Science Foundation, cutting hundreds of scientists, you know, across the federal government. But even with that, you have everyday citizens who are having a hard time purchasing gasoline. Even groceries. We're finding now where studies are showing that there are some citizens in this country that are purchasing weekly groceries on the these digital layaway plans like Clara, right? Where you buy now, pay later, or pay in installments.
Okay.
That's just to eat, right? And then on top of that, you have individuals, you have benefits being cut with SNAP. A study just came out where you have states where you're finding individual, like hundreds of people, thousands of people who are now finding their benefits being cut because of the extra steps that were put in place by this Congress and this administration, and the supplemental nutrition program being cut in order to pay for the additional tax cuts, along with the $1 trillion that was taken away to pay for additional tax cuts through the expansion of medical of healthcare. So all of this to benefit those who really could stand not to have it. You know, you ever heard the adage, the rich getting richer, right? And the poor getting poorer, where you're finding that happening more and more. And then we start to get into the future of our workforce with students and the like. But again, this comes at a very bad time. As a matter of fact, Lisa, you and I were talking before the show, and there was a U.S. congressman out of Texas who made a statement asking, it was a question being asked to him regarding what he's going to do on the 4th of July, you know, saying, and he was saying that he was going to eat lobsters and eat, you know, T-bones, because they were asking about the price of things. Texas Congressman Troy Nails, where he stated he was going to eat big lobster tails and nice ribeyes during the 4th of July. And when he was asked about Americans that can't afford this, because it was suggested about 60% of Americans are now living paycheck to paycheck, right? And he said, well, they probably simply not working as hard as he does, right? Mm. And of course, the president saying his stake on affordability, where with the housing bill, he was like, you know, this is a yawn to me, you know, unless we get the Save America Act, which again is a repressing and oppressing Voting Rights Act for the United States. So again, we see where this particular administration and this party are creating policies and making statements in the public purview that are out of touch with everyday people who are really, really, really struggling.
Yeah, the U.S. economy is experiencing elevated inflation. There's rising unemployment. And the price of hamburger on this 4th of July weekend is 14% higher than it was last year. Oof. I want to ask you, how do you think all of this is going to impact the midterms, or will it?
Well, there are two schools of thoughts on this, right? And again, you never know until the vote goes in. So I'll talk about the two school of thoughts as relates to the impact of affordability and the and then we'll talk about what is happening within the administration and this Congress and trying to cut the access of vote to a lot of Americans. All right. So when you are struggling, right, again, it's kitchen table topics, hands down. If you're looking and saying, can I afford the gasoline, you know, today? And you have someone that's representing you that's not addressing that, it's more than likely you're not going to vote for that individual again. You're going to vote for someone else to say, hey, we need someone who's going to fight for our topics, fight for us here on Main Street, right? But not just Main Street, but rural America and increasingly, Lisa, suburban America, right? I mean, you have families who are making six figures that are increasing credit card use for everyday items as well. Again, because you look at individuals being leveraged for cost of their education of children, prices going up, and still that wiggle room now has shrunk to a point where you basically have none. So every dollar and counts, and you have individuals who are professionals who are now also working paycheck to paycheck even more so. So that impacts the additional costs. And these are your more informed voters as well. So now they're weighing their cost, their livelihood. And if you're not answering those calls for affordability, you know, your likelihood of being replaced increases exponentially. Early on, when this administration started its draconian cuts and policies, there were a lot of our Republican congresspersons that were not holding town halls because they didn't want that smoke that was coming from the citizens. Well, those citizens haven't forgotten, and those individuals are ready for change. Now, whether there are changes primaries in the midterm elections to challenge to bring conservative-minded representatives in those districts for individuals to vote for, you know, that would be a strategy as well for the GOP to hold their numbers. However, we're finding where the president is having a lot more success with his candidates that he are supporting in various primaries across the country. So we see that with Ken Paxton out of Texas, the highly, you know, politically troubled former attorney general of Texas, but the president came and supported him and he won, right? So in those districts, in those areas where the president is very popular, no matter what the policies are, they're finding that they're digging in. Those voters are saying, we're going to stick with this president so he can finish what he wanted to do or what we thought he is going to do for us. Now, the other side of that is you have individuals in those districts that are losing everything, like our farmers. Mm-hmm. A lot of our farmers are in what we call red states, and a lot of them voted for the president. Of course, that's well documented. But these individuals are losing not only their farms and not getting access to capital, but they're taking their lives as well.
Wow. All right. I hate to break at this moment, but if you're just joining us, you're listening to Another View and the Clavel Report with Dr. Eric Clavel, our political analyst. If you'd like to join the discussion, please give us a call at 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Wow, that's pretty deep. I wanna take a couple of phone calls if we can right now. I wanna start with Leonard from Norfolk. Leonard, thank you for calling Another View. Please go right ahead.
Good afternoon. How you doing, darling?
Just fine.
Yeah. I got a question for my dear friend, Dr. Clavel. The first one is related to that senatorial race in Texas, and there's a potential that for the first time in decades, a Democrat could win that seat. But because some problems that Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett had in running for that race and losing to the guy who is running, a lot of black people are potentially going to withhold their vote or vote or write in a vote. I want to ask you about that. And also, what do you think is going to be the impact of the African-American vote in the upcoming midterm elections across the board?
Eric?
Yeah. Leonard, thank you so much for the call, my good friend. You know, you've been serving the community for decades and enjoying your journalism where you wrote for years with New Journal and Guys. So I appreciate your work that you've done. As relates to the African-American vote in the midterms and just any vote, especially now, you know, for anyone to quote unquote win the African-American vote or any vote, they're going to have to speak to those issues, speak to where they are. Now, that means all politics is local. So you have to speak to the local people that are experiencing these issues. You know, these overarching, just cookie cutter, talking points that are given from each party down is not going to get it. You know, you have to speak directly to where the people are. So again, you just can't address the big, you know, talking points because those aren't working anymore. Those are not working anymore. We saw where the Democratic Party lost some ground with African-American males in the last election. Well, how did they lose that ground and what did the Republican Party do to pick it up? You have to look at that. But still, and I want to make sure people understand, when you get a group of a block of individuals that are voting 82%+ for you, I mean, you're still in a very good position. And that's the percentage of African-American males voted in the last presidential election for the Democratic Party. I think the black females around 96% around that area. But again, when you're getting that type of vote, voting power, the question is not to take it for granted, because you have a lot of younger voters that are saying my vote is being taken for granted, especially when individuals get in office and they're not speaking or passing those policies that you advocated for. The other side of that is when you talk about Texas, you know, Texas is very, very interesting place. You know, I've lived in proximity to Texas for a lot of my years. And let me tell you, it's, if they get a Democratic senator, I would be highly surprised. Now, I do understand why Georgia did, and it's because of the influence of African Americans in Atlanta, a greater metro Atlanta area, and so forth. But if you take a look at Texas, you know, if it does go Democratic, things had to get really bad in the country for things to go Democratic for Texas. So even though this candidate, Ken Paxton, is flawed, a lot of people see him as flawed because of his some issues he's had politically and on the personal side. He's still an extremely viable candidate for the state of Texas. So with the issues with Jasmine Crockett and what happened in that primary, they're going to have to, as a party, they're going to have to figure it out. And again, you know, stranger things happen. You know, you create relationships and so forth. And get it over the finish line, because at the end of the day, sometimes it's better to have someone in office under the same letter than not, because you're able to work more effectively, theoretically, with them than not. So yeah. So you got to win the African-American vote. Do not take it for granted. And if the party does that, like they did in the last presidential election or in 2016, we can look at this thing going a whole different direction.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Eric. And thank you for calling. Leonard, I want to take a couple more calls before we shift over and talk about these student loans. Anita from Chesapeake, go right ahead.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question, and nobody on the national level has answered this as yet. Maybe you guys could help.
Go right ahead.
Concerning that big, beautiful jet plane that was given to the president, was that given to the United States or to the president himself? And what happens now that it's geared up to be the new Air Force One? When he leaves office, are we going to take all of that technology off so he can put it in his library? Any ideas on how this is going to run? I would appreciate you looking into it.
I can tell you that, thank you, Barry, that Republican senators on the Senate Appropriations Committee voted in August of 2025 that President Trump could keep the jet. And he has said it will become a part of his library. Now, as far as the technology that's on it, I can't answer that question. Yeah. Eric, you have any insight?
Yeah. Anything is possible under this administration and under this Republican Congress that has allowed him to do what he wants to do. So, again, this is unprecedented what we're seeing across the board. You know, and I challenge people to really ask themselves. Well, I'll give that challenge at the end.
All right. Thank you so much for calling, Anita. Greg from Norfolk has a question for us. Greg, go right ahead.
Yes, hello. Thank you for the great show again. My question is, you suggested earlier, okay, let people know how you feel, let your congressmen and senators know how you feel. Well, I'm in Virginia, where the senators and congressmen I call are on the same page as me already. But because of the two-party system, there's, let's call it thing what it is, the cowardly Republicans won't stand up to Trump on issues they know the Americans don't agree with. What do you do about that? I still call, but they say, yeah, we agree with you. Mm-hmm. So how do we circumvent that? People don't talk politics anymore. You know, I try and bring it up with an aunt in Minnesota who's a mega supporter. And be respectful and everything, but they avoid the subject with me. Yeah. So issues aren't issues anymore. What do we do about that?
Eric? suggestions?
No, absolutely. You know, thank you so much for your call. And thank you so much for participating in our civic and political process. You know, you say you're making those calls, you're having those conversations. And as citizens, we have the right to do that under the First Amendment. And you're exercising that. So if more people did that, we'll see a lot more change. Now, here's where you take the next step. You have to vote for a candidate that will answer your question and take your call. So if that particular group of individuals that are representing your district or representing your Commonwealth are not representing you the way that you feel, then you, along with a coalition of friends, family members, friends, and like-minded voters, have to change that representative. It can be done. And, you know, we see it happen all the time, especially when the Obama wave, they call it the Obama blue wave, that came in first. And you saw a lot of change. For example, in Charlottesville elected a Democratic congressman at the time who's now running for re-election of that same seat. We saw it in Virginia Beach, where Virginia Beach elected a Democratic congresswoman. And we're seeing that same former congresswoman running for re-election again. So it can be done. And it takes, you know, citizens like yourself and others who are like, you know what, we're going to get involved. We're going to get off the sidelines and we're going to get engaged. And your vote is the most powerful weapon that you have to do that, and your voice. So thank you for using your voice and not abrogating it like one party in Congress right now.
Thank you so much for calling in, Greg. We appreciate that. Shifting gears just a little bit. The new student loan rules took effect yesterday. Mm-hmm. These new rules will limit how much you can borrow and your repayment options. Now, an analyst for the National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrator, Cher Austin, says, these are the most changes we have seen at this scale in a very long time. More than 7 million people enrolled in the Saving on a Valuable Education, or SAVE plan, which was established during the Biden administration, will be impacted. That two-year legal battle didn't go the way many had hoped it would. It's fading out. Borrowers have 90 days to select a plan. If you don't choose one, your servicer is going to choose one for you.
They're going to choose one for you.
Eric, how do you feel about the impact of all this? What do you think the impact is going to be?
Well, the impact is going to be felt for generations to come, first of all. You know, where we see this administration overstepping and allowing others to take advantage of wealth and ignoring rules of checks and balance and fairness, we see the pendulum swinging in the other direction and punishing others that cannot dictate their own terms. We're talking about individuals that need health care. We're talking about individuals on disability who are taking care of disabled family members under that plan. We're talking about individuals who need supplemental nutrition. We're talking about individuals that are pursuing higher education as an avenue for upper mobility in this country. I want to say, if you think about one of our greatest exports of this country, one of our greatest exports of this country is education. People come from all over the world, from villages where they hear, if you come to America and get it and be enrolled in university, you have an opportunity to go from nothing to someone, just like that. I mean, think about that. That's a phenomenon that our world has really never really experienced on that scale. But not only that, but the country also recognized that, to where they provided, you know, GI Bill for GIs coming back. They provided student loan assistance, even Pell Grant for students who come from lesser means to go to university of their choice that they can pay for. I mean, again, these are all things that our country has invested in order to bring people into a, not just a working, not out of poverty, and not just into a working class, but a middle and upper mobility class, right? I've got friends, you know, we grew up riding bikes, playing in the dirt, that said, I'm going to be a doctor, and they're physicians to this day, right? That can only happen. Why not say only, but that happens here, right? So now when you create rules that punish those individuals for the repayment of their loan, you know, that just flies in the face of the opportunity of part of the, what we called the American dream, what's sold to us, what's sold to the rest of the world. You know, now these changes. Now, again, I'm advocating for, and many people are advocating for, terms and conditions that you could utilize and that won't hinder your day-to-day living, but also honor the terms in which you said you'll pay these loans back. And then from there, you know, creating a plan, an opportunity for them to be forgiven after a certain period of time. We do it all the time, right? During the pandemic. Now, for those that say, well, you made that deal, you pay it back, and so forth and so on, right? Well,
I hear that often,
right,
actually.
Right, exactly. Okay, so let's look at what we do all the time, right? Let's go to the pandemic. Private businesses received grants from the federal government through the taxpayer to pay salaries, to keep operation costs, and the like. Some in the tens of thousands and some in the millions of dollars too. And guess what happened? Those loans became grants that became forgiven. So you ain't paying none of that back. But now you rally at advocates for higher education student loans for students that want avenues to help them start paying and get to a point where they could be forgiven by giving public service or paying consistently over 10 years, where yours were forgiven after 12 months of not doing anything. So again, you have to look at the, when you sit back and look at the impact and the argument, you have to get your facts straight, but also you have to look at the long-term impact it's going to have on students. Now, what's also going to happen, Lisa, we're going to see tons of individuals that are going to be garnished their wages, because when you have four plans that you could buy into for affordability, income driven and the like, and then they're down to two, that gives you less ability in order to pay. And then bankruptcy rules are against you as well. Only for, guess what? Student loans. You could reorganize your finances under bankruptcy law, through business or personal, for just about any debt, except student loans are ironclad. You know, there's a minor exceptions for it. I mean, minor exceptions, right? So when you look at who the nation favors in helping individuals get to a level of upper mobility and decision-making positions, individuals that need student loans are those that from every demographic, but especially people of color that can't afford to pay out of their pocket, you know, the increased cost of higher education. Now, money's being put into workforce development, which is great because we have a lot of high-level skilled jobs that we need, especially here in the Hampton Roads area, and that is phenomenal. And a lot of our parents, and even now, individuals building great lives and putting in and had great starts in lives, owning homes, putting kids through schools, the best schools in the area, for their family members on those highly trained skilled jobs, and those are phenomenal. But what it does is, if you're not given the option or the ability to move forward or move up from the high, if you desire, into more decision-making positions because of now student loans and certain degrees that are now considered you can't get a loan for them because they don't qualify under this administration, you limit the people, certain types of people, and you limit the amount of individuals that could move up into decision-making positions. So this is not a good thing, you know, when you take a look at it. And for those that have had their loans forgiven over X amount of time, making those consistent payments, you know the struggle, you know, that you went through to do that, but the opportunity you were also given for those loans in order to get your education is also invaluable. So it's also investment.
Right. There are two options, I understand, an income-based repayment plan and a repayment assistance plan. If you're a borrower, please talk to your loan servicer to better navigate the transition and determine the repayment plan that works best for you.
And then also real quick, you know, when you look at that, that's creating that forever debtor, right? Because the same administration that threw out, I think it was like a 40 or 50 year mortgage or something like that. come on. You know, how can you save and for upper mobility and for a legacy if you now are putting a product out to your citizens for half a century. Who pays for half a century?
Yeah, right? That's a long time.
And that's what these equivalent to that are these student loan repayments. I mean, it's absolutely insane. But again, look, the truth is in the policy. You see what this country, what this administration values and who they value in this country for their policy.
All right, we've got about 7 minutes left, and I want to touch on this weekend. America celebrates its 250th birthday, and a new PBS NewsHour NPR Marist poll says most Americans feel that the country has drifted from its founding ideals. Some feeling that things have become so divisive in this country that violence may be necessary to set things straight. Two-thirds of those polled, about 65%, say they're proud to be an American, while 35% say they are not. 58% of young people under the age of 30 say violence may be necessary to turn things around. Now, listed as some of the issues that divide the country and pose the biggest threat to democracy: immigration, systemic racism, gun policies, public safety. Eric, what you got? What you thinking?
You know, one thing I will say, when I mention America, when I mention our Commonwealth, I always say it's ours, our America, our Commonwealth. And if you're born and bred here, you know, you're naturalized here, you have a stake in this great experiment, this of the United States of America, which is democracy. You know, it's amazing that we are celebrating something that started from officially a quarter of a millennial ago, right? Sesquicentennial.
Sesquicentennial.
You know what I mean? So 250 years. That is amazing within us, especially in modern time. Now, of course, through our history, we've had empires and countries that lasted, you know, 1,000 years of XYZ. But again, things were slower. But when you look at the pace of change from an industrial, from an agricultural, agribusiness driven society, to now industrial, to now we're looking at digital. You know, it's just amazing what we're seeing. It's amazing that our country has been at the forefront of it. But empires rise and fall. They usually fall within the walls first before they fall from outside the walls. We've got an opportunity to sit back and reflect. Yeah, and that's the challenge, right, that I want to issue to our listeners. This weekend, celebrate with your family, friends, as you normally would do. But take an extra moment to sit back and reflect upon our America, your America, and ask yourself, is this really the America that I want to continue living in and want to give, pass on to my children and my grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, which if the Lord bless, you're able to see, right? Because if it's not, then you have an opportunity to work to change it. We have mechanisms. You know, the country's not broken. The Constitution's not broken. The mechanism's not broken. They're just not who we have in office. They're not using them, right? They put a pause on it. They paused the machine. But you can remove, if you want, you can vote to have those hands that are on the lever removed, or you can engage them and convince them to change their ways, right? So there's many ways within our system we can work to have the country they want. Now, if this is the country you want, then continue to support it the way it is. But if it's not, then work to change it, because only you can do that. Your voice and your vote, those are the two most powerful weapons that we have, or instruments or tools that we have in this country in order to fight against it. Now, when you take a look at America itself, one great aspect of all the freedoms we have is through birthright citizenship. That was challenged through this administration.
Yes, it was.
And this was challenged. This executive order by President Trump was challenged in the court, and it was one of the last decisions in this last Supreme Court term. And it came out, and of course, Justice Thomas was walking around Capitol Hill before this decision came out. But in effect, his executive order said, if you are a child born in this country, and your parents are illegal or have temporary status and deemed to be illegal afterwards, you're not a citizen. Therefore, you have no rights, right? Luckily, in a very slim margin, by the way. In essence, it was 5-4. Justice Kavanaugh, he agreed, but in part, but also dissented in part. So really it was 6-3. But in essence, it was 5-4. To say that the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, the opposition was saying the 14th Amendment was only for freed slaves to make them citizens. That's what Clarence Thomas said. Now, he got a rebuke from one of the other justices that said, now, all of a sudden, you say the Constitution is colorblind, but now you will put color to it. You can't pick and choose, but that's what this Supreme Court is doing. So you got Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, and Justice Gorsuch that agree with the president that said, if you are of temporary status or you are here illegally and you have a child that's born, you're not a citizen. That goes against not only the 1866 Civil Rights Act after the Civil War, the 14th Amendment. That goes against precedents. Of course, we have this case, the Kim case, that was referenced as well. But all of those cases and that precedent was against the rebuke of the Dred Scott case, in which Chief Justice Taney said, there are no rights that any black man has that any white man is bound to respect. That's in a Supreme Court decision to this day. The Dred Scott case is the legal Supreme Court. It's the legal shot. The legal shot that's helped to start the Civil War. And the Civil War was started over this same issue. And we're still fighting it to this day. And we have individuals who are on the court that are advocating for that same principle in Dred Scott today. Right? So, again, what we're dealing with, these are real issues we're dealing with. And as one of the callers said, he said, they don't want to talk about it. You can put your face in the sand if you want, your head in the sand if you want to. But I challenge all of us to sit back. And by the way, because of a 6-3 decision, Justice Roberts wrote a phenomenal majority opinion. And of course, Justice Coney Barrett joined in. Of course, Kagan Sotomayor. And Justice Brown, Ketanji Brown Jackson also. But when you take a look at this, I want you to sit back and ask yourself, is this America that you want?
Thank you so much. And we will end on that note. Thank you, Dr. Eric Clavel with the Clavel Report. Next week on Another View, Barbara will be back. And guess what? In August, Another View will take the show on the road for two live broadcasts. First will be August 6th. We'll be visiting the recently renovated Rosenwald School on Virginia's Eastern Shore. We're going to Cape Charles, y'all. And then on the 27th, we'll travel to Fort Monroe for a sneak peek at the specially commissioned statue that will soon call the new African Landing Memorial home. So we want you to come on out and be a part of our live broadcast. You can reserve your seats at whro.org/events. Thank you so much for being a part of today's broadcast and giving us a little bit of your lunch hour. Our theme music is an original composition created especially for Another View by Jay Sennett. Dr. Barry Graham filled in for me as today's show producer. Thank you so much, Barry. Jordan Christie is our audio engineer and our news director. Michelle Hankerson answered our phones. I'm Another View producer, Lisa Godley. And please be safe this holiday weekend. Be sure to join us next Thursday at noon for Another View.
Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, carrying out your charitable wishes forever. Whether it's helping shelter animals, feeding the homeless, enhancing the arts, or supporting students. Learn more at leaveabequest.org.